Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the February NJEDA board meeting. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad to be placed in a queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1, then 0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Kevin Quinn. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. Tim, if you could read the open public meeting notice.
Yeah, good morning, Chairman. Good morning, everybody. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star Ledger and the Times of Trenton at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Tim. Manera, if we could do a roll call, please.
Yes. Chairman Kevin Quinn.
Here.
Vice Chair Charles Farlow.
Here.
Bill Alagia.
Here.
Virginia Bauer.
Here.
Aisha Glover.
Present.
Marcia Morley.
Here.
Robert Shimko.
Here.
From the Executive Branch, Noreen Giblin.
Here.
State Treasurer Elizabeth Moya.
Here.
Labor Commissioner Robert Angelo.
Here. Go Birds.
Banking Commissioner Marlene Cerviti.
Present.
Elizabeth Dragon for DEP Commissioner Sean LaSarette.
Here.
Brett Dumont. Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Manera. We have three sets of meeting minutes to approve this morning. As is our custom, I just ask board members when making a motion or a second to please state their name for the record. Before you, you have the minutes from the December 21st NJEDA board meeting for review and approval. Can I get a motion to approve?
Motion to approve, Dragon.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Second, Elijah.
Thank you, Phil. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Our next set of meeting minutes is from the December 21st executive session meeting minutes. Can I get a motion to approve?
Cerviti moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. And our last set of meeting minutes for approval, the January 18th EDA special board meeting. Can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I second? Charles?
Yes.
Great. Sure. Thank you. And any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, we'll move to my comments this morning. Let me say that today seems to be bring the board back to Trenton Day, and the irony is I'm not there with you, and so I'm disappointed about that. All of you get to enjoy our warm and enthusiastic EDA staff, and I do miss them as well this morning. Now, just hours after our December board meeting, the Fort Monmouth Economic Revitalization Authority approved Netflix purchase of the mega parcel at Fort Monmouth, a win for both New Jersey's growing film industry and our state economy. The Netflix deal is estimated to generate between $7.4 billion and $8.9 billion in output over the next 20 years for production and construction, all the while creating 3,500 construction jobs and 2,200 permanent jobs. diversity is one of New Jersey's greatest strengths. And it's a time to commemorate the history, the hardships, culture, and achievements, and the contributions of Black business owners and entrepreneurs to this state in what is Black February being Black History Month. Throughout February, the EDA will be using its social presence, media relationships, and other channels to highlight businesses and stakeholders that exemplify the importance of Black-owned businesses to New Jersey's business community. Under Governor Murphy's leadership, even more so than celebrating these notable contributions, Black History Month is about acknowledging and addressing the disparities people of color face with access to critical resources, especially precious capital. And that awareness and drive doesn't stop at the end of February. Throughout the year, the EDA administers programs that include considerations for minority-owned businesses and businesses in opportunity zones or distressed communities. This also includes breaking down barriers to accessing capital and ensuring that opportunities in high-growth sectors such as film, cannabis, offshore wind, and clean energy are accessible to people of color and black-owned businesses. We're also proud to partner with the African American Chamber of Commerce and the statewide Hispanic Chamber of Commerce to offer the Small Business Bonding Readiness Program, which helps to prepare small businesses to secure lucrative government contracts. We're also very excited about the prospect of creating the Black and Latino Seed Fund. The goal of the fund is to increase access to capital for minority-owned businesses and to help offset the diversity crisis in the nation's innovation economy. While Black History Month is a celebration of the progress and accomplishments of Black Americans, we must also let it serve as a reminder of the work that needs to be done towards a stronger and fairer New Jersey economy. I look forward to the continued collaboration with EDA staff, this board, and the community towards this economic and social justice initiative. Tim?
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I think you noted, we have a robust agenda to get through, so I'll be endeavor to be brief, but there's a lot going on. We didn't get together in January, but for a 10-minute quick telephonic board meeting, which I'll touch back why we did that in a moment. But it's been a busy time since we last convened. The chairman mentioned Netflix, obviously huge news that broke same day as our last board meeting. Subsequent to that, a number of really positive announcements as part of the governor's continued commitment to diversifying the economy. We were in California, and good timing, we released some extraordinary news about film production volumes in the state approaching $650 million, which is a record by far. Film and TV production in the state generating 8,500 jobs, or supporting 8,500 jobs in the state. And I think that we're just getting warmed up between Lionsgate and Netflix and a few other major studio projects. I think the road ahead for film and TV is extraordinarily bright. We've also had some really good positive developments on the offshore wind front. The governor was at the South Jersey Chamber of Commerce and announced that Atlantic Shores is going to be the second tenant at the wind port. It's going to create 200 new jobs in marshalling. We'll talk about offshore wind with Janet Julia in a moment. But really continued strong momentum despite some pretty sizable headwinds in the offshore wind world. Really good continued strong momentum there. We also issued, the reason we were together briefly in January, we issued $160 million of bonds to support the continued fit-out and finalization of phase one of the Windport project. I would note those are the first green bonds issued in the history of the state of New Jersey. Attracted really extraordinary investor sentiment. Couldn't give a bigger shout-out and thanks to Treasurer Moyo and her great team, Michael Caniff and the public finance team, were extraordinary partners and colleagues along the way with our team in issuing that that really successful bond offering. Have made some really exciting news, too. The first, right before we left for California, joined the First Lady and Judith Sheff, the Executive Director of the Commission on Science, Innovation, and Technology, up at our Bioscience Center in North Brunswick to make grants to 17 startup companies that are investing or innovating in the field of maternal and infant health and endeavoring to solve the really pernicious challenge. We talk about, I'll get to Black History Month in a moment, but the disparities between black moms and white moms in New Jersey is unacceptable, doesn't begin to scratch the surface of describing that state of affairs. And these are 17 startups based in New Jersey that are in various different ways working to attack that crisis. The EDA provided some funding, CSIT provided some funding, and a really good example of leveraging New Jersey's leadership position in innovation to tackle really important and longstanding inequalities and challenges in the economy, and so we're really excited about that. I've also had a number of exciting ribbon cuttings and welcoming some businesses to the state. We were in with Mayor Fulop up in Jersey City to announce a company called Bluevine, a fintech company based in Israel, is moving its U.S. headquarters to Jersey City. I was in Lakewood with the Israel Commission earlier this week for a great visit to a number of businesses down there, including, again, another ribbon cutting supporting, 50 or so new jobs in New Jersey, so continues to see good news and momentum all throughout the economy. The chairman mentioned, and I think covered extremely well, Black History Month, and obviously all the things we're doing to renew and deepen our commitment to equity and inclusion in everything we do in economic development. One of those things we'll do tomorrow, assuming the press release button is working, we will issue a solicitation for the Black and Latino Seed Fund as well as some other funds for the SSBCI program, which Marta will talk about in a few minutes. There's a modest fib that we recently issued in the report, but we will issue tomorrow. Please don't sanction me too much during the CEO report. One word. We will tomorrow issue those solicitations to deploy about $150 million of capital, federal and state. The headliner is the Black and Latino Seed Fund, but also focused on life science and healthcare, a blended capital fund to support small businesses and really tackling a number of innovation and equity challenges and opportunities. So, again, lots going on. We will cover a lot today. Again, as we mark Black History Month this month, an appropriate time to, again, renew and deepen our commitment to equity, inclusion, justice in everything we do as best we can under Governor Murphy's leadership and Lieutenant Governor's leadership to drive home all these initiatives and make a difference while also creating prosperity and growing the economy. With that, Mr. Chairman, I will yield the floor back to you unless there's any questions.
Great. Thank you, Tim. We have 18 remaining votes this morning, so we're going to be busy. As chair of the Audit and the Policy Committees, we were busy in preparation for this meeting. The Audit Committee met specifically to review the 2021 annual report. The Policy Committee reviewed several memos. I'll highlight a few here, three items under the Lynn Institute, a grant between the EDA and Treasury for innovation and training, and two Wynn Institute fellowship programs, one each for public and private universities in the state. Under community development, the creation of a New Jersey indoor amusement park pilot, amusement park grant pilot program, and the award of six asset activation planning grants. So let's jump right into the Wynn Institute items. This is the Wynn Institute for Innovation and Training grant agreement. The EDA and the New Jersey Department of Treasury, Jen Becker, Managing Director, Wynn Institute Development, presenting. Jen.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, everybody. So the members are asked to approve a grant agreement between EDA and the New Jersey Department of the Treasury. The grant agreement enables the Treasury Department to provide $5 million in grant funding to EDA to support the Wynn Institute for Innovation and Training, Administration, Operations, and Programmatic Expenses to further workforce training, education, research, and innovation programs that will empower New Jerseyans to participate in the offshore wind industry. In New Jersey's fiscal year 23 budget, $5 million was appropriated as a grant and aid for the Wind Institute for Innovation and Training under the Treasury Department. To continue the state's efforts to launch the Wind Institute, the Treasury Department is now granting this funding to EDA. The grant funding will support administrative expenses, including but not limited to staff, office supplies, travel and technology, and the development and execution of programs through deploying funding and resources to partner organizations or providing other supports for offshore wind workforce and skills training, stakeholder engagement and education initiatives that promote and explain the opportunities and benefits of the growing offshore wind industry, research that furthers the development of offshore wind in the state, and our other efforts to support innovation that furthers efficiencies in offshore wind technology and development. EDA will establish a separate bank account to manage and track these funds. All funds must be expended or obligated by June 30, 2024, and EDA will submit an interim report by November 30, 2023, and a final report by July 31, 2024. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Jen? If we have no questions for Jen, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you. Elizabeth, can I get a second?
Angelo.
Thank you, Rob. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item. Wynn Institute Fellowship Program for Public Universities. Julia Courtreet, Manager, Wynn Institute, presenting. Julia.
Good morning, and thank you all for your time. So I have two very similar programs, so I'll go a little more detail into the first, and then we'll allude to the changes, or explain the changes in the second program. So first, our Wynn Institute Fellowship Public Universities memo, we are asking members to approve 5 memorandums of understanding with similar terms with Montclair State University, New Jersey Institute of Technology, Rowan University, Rutgers University, and Stockton University to support student research in offshore wind via the Wynn Institute Fellowship Program for the 2023 to 2024 and 2024 to 2025 academic years. This is our second and third years of our fellowship program. And we're also asking members to approve utilization of up to $1,971,200 and funding for the fellowship program to be split equally between funding from the $10 million allocated via the October 2022 memo of understanding between EDA and the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities, as well as the FY23 state budget allocation for $5 million grant and aid to yet to be established Wynn Institute for Innovation and Training. So in terms of the details here, the program is designed to encourage and support student research and topics that further development of offshore wind in New Jersey and build student and faculty advisor expertise in the offshore wind industry. Participating students conduct independent research under the tutelage of a faculty advisor at their home institution, and then EDA convenes the fellows as a cohort to participate in industry trainings, guest lectures, site visits, and other activities to support their knowledge of the offshore wind industry and their exposure to industry stakeholders, culminating in a research symposium. So this past year, we supported 26 fellows. In our second and third academic years, we now seek to enter into a new but similar set of MOUs with these four schools, as well as Stockton University. While Stockton is not a R1 or R2 research university, as the others, we recommend inclusion of this university as the fifth public school because of its involvement in offshore wind. So the MOUs before you outline that for each fellowship year, each university will be responsible for recruiting a diverse set of students and managing their own application and selection processes. This also includes the responsibility for submitting marketing and recruitment plans that include plans for supporting and ensuring diversity and inclusion in their recruitment. So these fellows can be upperclassmen, juniors and seniors, or graduate students, including master's and doctoral students, in any discipline or degree, as long as they are conducting research focused on offshore wind. So each school will have 4 spots each year, with the exception of Rutgers, which will have 12 given each year, or each year given its larger enrollment size. Just a quick breakdown of the funding. So each graduate fellow will have $30,000. Undergraduate fellows, $15,000 as a stipend, as well as $1,000 per or for all students to support travel, materials, and other fellowship expenses, $1,000 faculty honorarium for faculty advisor, and then 10% of the grant amount for facilities and administration expenses. I also want to be clear that the maximum grant amount for each of the universities, with the exception of Rutgers, is $140,800. And for Rutgers, $422,400 per year, assuming if they were to choose all graduate students, though that could be lower if they have a mix of undergraduate and graduate. Schools will submit a final report detailing the use of funds at the end of each fellowship year and return funds not utilized for the program and by the established dates. Thank you so much, and happy to take questions.
Do we have any questions for Julia?
I do have a question, actually. For the fellowship,
I understand they're going to have a detailed report of the spending of the funds, but I'm assuming that the EDA used them as research for input for moving forward with any kind of new developments with wind. Does that get reported to the board, or do you guys use it internally?
There are a number of ways we can share that information. So first, we have our annual symposium. So it heads up April 14th. All of our fellows will be presenting their research along with potentially some of the universities and the research that we've supported thus far. That'll be an annual opportunity for folks to hear about the work our fellows are doing, as well as we work to further go through our research and development feasibility study that we've been working on for the almost the past year now. I think it's also helping and further inform future investments in the research, development, and innovation side of offshore wind.
Whatever they produce will certainly be helpful to us. We hope it's actually more helpful to the industry and to stakeholders in workforce development, et cetera, because I have no idea what these guys are going to be, folks will be researching, but maybe it's innovative ways to do transmission. Maybe it's some new kind of turbine. Maybe it's some way to install more efficient. So a lot of that, I think, will be a broader benefit than just certain things. We'll broader.
Some of our fellows are looking at innovation or innovative designs and foundations. Some are looking at different transmission approaches. Others are looking more at the social science in terms of outreach and engagement. So there's a wide range of focus areas that I think have a wide applicability, though they ultimately work with their faculty advisors to shape what their research project will look like.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
If we have no other questions for Julia, can I get a motion to approve?
Faridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Thank you, Elijah.
Thank you, Phil. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Let's move on to the next item. We're sticking with Julia here. This is the Wind Institute Fellowship Program for Private Research Universities. Julia.
Thank you, Chairman. So, again, this is a very similar program to what I described as before, and functionally will work as the same program, except it is with our private public mission universities. So they will be provided funding through a grant agreement requesting grant delegate authority to approve individual applications. So these programs are run in the exact same manner, with the difference being that private universities will have to apply to participate, and there'll be a $1,000 non-refundable application fee to apply. The three universities that qualify under this are Seton Hall University, Princeton University, as well as Stevens, thank you. So I'll spare the time to go into the details to repeat, but happy to take any questions.
Questions for Julia? We have no questions for Julia. Can I get a motion to approve?
Robert Chinko.
Thank you, Rob. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bell, the radio second.
Thank you, Jenny and Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move to the next item on the agenda, modification to the SSBCI Clean Energy Business Financing Program. The New Jersey Clean Energy Loans. Marta Cabral, Senior Project Manager, Clean Energy, presenting. Marta.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the board. I'm presenting a memo requesting that the board approve a modification to the SSBCI Clean Energy Business Financing Program, also known as New Jersey Clean Energy Loans, or NJCELS. As a reminder, NJCELS is a co-lending program that offers term loans to eligible small businesses seeking to finance clean energy projects. On November 16, 2022, the board approved the creation of this $80 million program.
using funds from New Jersey's allocation from U.S. Treasury's State Small Business Credit Initiative, SSBCI. NJ-CELS is a loan participation program. The NJEDA will originate companion loans directly to borrowers in parallel with private lenders or purchase participation in loans that lenders extend to borrowers. So the modification we are requesting is as follows. NJ-CELS was approved by the board with the following requirement. In order to be a private lender, the institution must be on NJEDA's premier lender list, which can include CDFIs, credit unions, and minority women or veteran-owned financial institutions. The memo requests the following amendment to the definition of private lender for NJ-CELS. In order to be a private lender, the institution must meet the requirements for lenders as set forth in the SSBCI Capital Program Policy Guidelines and must meet the criteria in the attached program specification sheet. For reference, SSBCI guidelines define lenders as follows. Lenders are entities that bear the risk of loan transactions on a transaction-by-transaction basis. Lenders must bear 20% or more of the risk of loss in any loan transaction and must retain at least 5% of the risk of loss of the transaction if they transfer the ownership or risk of the lending transaction. In addition, private lenders must either be on the NJEDA Premier Lender List or CDFI Premier Lender List, or be a bank, pension fund, insurance company, or other entity that has originated, maintained, and serviced more than $5 million in clean energy loans over a three-year period. This amendment would allow us to expand the pool of eligible lenders for the program, which would help ensure that SSBCI funds are deployed within the required timeline. So in closing, we are requesting that the board approve our proposed modification to the definition of private lender for NJ-CELS, broadening the pool of eligible lenders beyond NJEDA's premier lender list. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions for Martha? If we have no questions for Martha, can I get a motion to approve?
Giblin, so moved.
Thank you, Noreen. Second?
Marcia Marley, second.
Thank you, Marcia. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Thank you, Marta. Let's move on to our next item. Janelle Johnson, Managing Director, Community Development, presenting the New Jersey Indoor Amusement Park Grant Program. Janelle.
Good morning. This memo is seeking approval from the board to utilize $5 million from the Fiscal Year 2023 Appropriations Act designated to NJEDA for the creation of a recovery grant to support indoor amusement parks. This pilot grant program will be identified as the New Jersey Indoor Amusement Park Grant. This grant will provide funding to for-profit establishments that operate indoor amusement parks, arcades, and entertainment facilities that demonstrate a minimum 50% reduction of indoor gross revenue for the 12-month period beginning April 1st, 2019, as per the language in the fiscal year 2023 budget. Staff is seeking delegated authority to the Chief Executive Officer to approve applications within the parameters set forth in the memo, in addition to the program specifications. This appropriation identifies businesses engaged in activities related to two specific NAICS codes, 713110 and 713120. All other NAICS codes are not eligible to apply for this program. An eligible applicant must have either NAICS code listed on their unamended 2020 federal tax returns to their current filing. The applicant will also be required to provide a New Jersey formation documentation to verify the business was formed on or before March 9, 2020, prior to the governor-declared emergency, and must also certify at the time of application to the NJEDA they are presently open and operating. The applicant will demonstrate the need for this grant by providing a self-certification on revenue loss, which will be verified through their federal tax returns from 2019 to current.
Awards will be sized up to $100,000, and if the applicant is in an opportunity zone eligible census tract, the award may be capped as high as $150,000. The minimum award for this program is $5,000. Eligible applicants will receive a grant award on a one-time disbursement, and the funds can be used for working capital expenses only. Pretty straightforward program, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Great job, Janelle. Janelle joined us about 6 weeks ago. She's our editor for board meeting. Great job, Janelle. Just by way of atmospheric here, the federal government obviously provided a tremendous amount of resources to lots of different kinds of businesses. Everybody got PPP. Performing arts industry got State of Our Stages. The restaurant industry got the restaurant revitalization, something other. There was a bit of a donut hole for indoor amusement parks, and the legislature and the governor saw fit to endeavor to fix that a bit here. This is a bit of a catch-up on something the Fed kind of missed when they did two big grant programs. Not that the Fed's ever making a mistake. They don't.
Tim,
all
it's
the
Jenny. Chairman. I just was going to comment. I was curious to why this was being offered, but you just answered the question. I guess it somehow got slipped through the cracks.
Yeah. Are there any future ideas about outdoor recreation or amusement parks that may have suffered during COVID? I mean, oddly specific, just indoors, I guess because of the restrictions.
Yeah, for this one, we're restricted by what's in the budget language, so legislature and governor were to direct us to do one for outdoor amusement parks. I suspect we'd be back here in short order with the program.
Outdoor was actually open sooner and was able to bounce back based on the six-foot distance and, you know, the safer environment rather than being indoors within closer proximity.
I have another question. I don't know all the codes, but would, like, indoor batting cages and things along those lines be considered indoor spaces eligible?
As long as that business files under the prior two NICS codes I mentioned, they would be eligible.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions for Janelle? If we have no other questions for Janelle, can I get a motion to approve?
Move the Roger.
Thank you, Phil. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bowell.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item is the award of New Jersey Asset Activation Planning Grants. Jason Miller, Senior Planner, Policy and Data Analytics, Community Development presenting. Jason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The New Jersey Asset Activation Planning Grant, just as a reminder, provides grants for public, private, and nonprofit entities for pre-development planning activities of projects that activate distressed and underutilized public assets. Applications for the program are reviewed, scored, and recommended for awards in the order in which they were submitted. The program received 11 applications before the acceptance period closed in October 2022. Two grants were approved at the November board meeting for the Meadowlands Regional 2040 Foundation and Rutgers University. They've begun execution of their grants and preparations to begin their planning projects. This month, the program is recommending six more awards for the board's approval. Each of the six recommended applicants were found to meet program requirements and the scoring threshold, and we would like to just give a brief overview of the projects proposed. First, Mount Holly Township is requesting $11,000 for a feasibility study and concept plan to repurpose a township-owned parking lot as a community open space. Removing a impervious area and adding green stormwater infrastructure will also mitigate flooding, which regularly occurs in the area. Next, Ryarmo Photography Studio LLC is a live-work art studio within the Lower Broadway neighborhood of Newark, which has evolved into a community creative space. The applicant requests $50,000 to conduct preliminary analyses and concepts designed to demonstrate viability of a mixed-use, mixed-income development project. The project will also undertake a zoning analysis, site survey, environmental review, financial feasibility analysis, and preliminary market study. Atlantic City is requesting $50,000 to conduct a legal analysis and feasibility study for Renaissance Plaza, the shopping plaza in the Midtown neighborhood owned by the Casino Reinvestment Development Authority, with several retail tenants, including a pharmacy and grocery store. The Camden Special Services District is requesting $50,000 for their Market Street Plaza placemaking and activation study to assess conditions, engage in public outreach, and produce conceptual designs to beautify and activate public space at 3rd and Market Street in Camden. Additional programming such as live music, temporary street closures, public arts events, and food truck operations would also fall under the existing public space management responsibilities of the CSSD. The study and implementation of these improvements is an objective of the city's Cooper Grant Central Waterfront Area Neighborhood Activation Plan. The Trenton Parking Authority is requesting $47,000 to undertake visioning through civic engagement and a market analysis of the five-level parking garage on Broad and Front Streets. The garage, which is in the core of Trenton's downtown district, was determined to be structurally unsound in 2012 and ceased use since that time. And last, the borough of Penns Grove is requesting $50,000 for an economic analysis and feasibility study of the borough's waterfront area, which includes borough-managed open space along the Delaware River with a pavilion and abandoned pier and several properties along West Main Street. As you can see, this program has appealed to a diverse range of applicants across the entire state, including many communities targeted for development assistance. We believe this speaks well to the broad underlying need for the type of planning support this program provides and to the insightful design and guidance that the program received from the Great Community Development team at EDA. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have or about the program or the recommendations.
Do you have any questions for Jason?
Sure, echoing what Jason just said, you know, Christina, we're wandering around Penns Grove with that team. This is a really useful tool when we're out in the world trying to help people sort of solve problems. You're not even sure what the problem really is yet, but you know there's a need there, and this is Penns Grove waterfront. There's, take a walk around there, there's just a couple cool assets, but it needs some reasons for thinking. This is a really good tool to be able to point to, hey, there's actually some money available to do that as opposed to, good luck, keep it posted, how it's going. It's been a relatively small dollar investment to hopefully plant some seeds for future projects.
Other questions, observations? If we have none, can I get a motion to approve?
Can I get a motion to approve?
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Second,
Elijah. Thank you, Phil. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, next item, recommendation for additional funding for Main Street Micro Business Loan. Christina Fuentes, VP of Community and Business Development, presenting. Christina.
Morning. So this memo is seeking the approval of the members to utilize a $25 million appropriation called Lending Partnerships. It was identified in the fiscal year 2022 Appropriations Act. So this appropriation that NJEDA received was intended to support existing lending products. Due to the oversubscription of the Main Street microbusiness loan, staff is requesting that this appropriation support this product. This loan offered a $50,000 working capital loan to eligible New Jersey microbusinesses and featured very attractive and flexible lending terms. Board previously approved the initial funding allocation of $20 million for this product, and as of January 23rd, we have only $3.7 million left to fund approvals. So staff is requesting to allocate the $25 million lending partnership appropriation to this product to ensure more eligible New Jersey microbusinesses can continue to receive this much-needed funding.
Just note on the back of Christina's excellent presentation, you know, we talked about it being Black History Month and equity and inclusion in our all of our programs. Microbusiness is a really important, microbusiness sort of policy ambition is really important to target. Minority-owned businesses. Something like 90-plus percent of Black and Latino-owned small businesses in New Jersey are some form of microbusiness. Mm-hmm. So 100% one-to-one, but there's a very high alignment of the governor's commitment to equity and inclusion in economic development around microbusinesses.
In that committee, I did a deeper dive on approval, so staff or the committee members could see 44% of our approvals actually went to minorities as well, too.
Yeah.
Any other questions? If there's no other questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Aisha Glover, I'm
okay. Thank you, Aisha. Can I get a second?
Second, Marcia.
Farid moves.
Thank you, Marcia. Any discussion? We got a lot of enthusiasm. I like that. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Before moving to the incentives portion of our agenda, Jenny Bauer, Chair, would you like to make a few comments about your committee?
Thank you, Chairman. The Incentive Committee also has had a very full agenda. We actually met twice on January 27th as well as February 2nd, and the reason being is we wanted to clarify some of the policies for the measuring of the economic benefit of transformative commercial projects, of which we will discuss, as well as also under Aspire, a request to approve the application for New Jersey Innovation Association Urban Renewal, which is in New Brunswick, as well as we went over GROW. We have a request to approve square footage for a qualified business under for Just Greens and determination also under GROW. So I think that's about it. As I said, we had a very full agenda, and we're happy to move this forward.
Great. Thank you, Jenny. So the first item here is a Aspire project policy, well, a benefit test amendment, policy for measuring the economic benefit of transformative commercial projects, an amendment to the net benefit test requirement for such projects. Nat Budigheimer, Director of Real Estate Investment Projects, presenting. Nat.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. So our current approach to measuring net economic benefit in the Aspire program has a couple of key features. The first is that it applies only to commercial development. Second is it's the same for all commercial projects, irrespective of size or economic sector. It uses average employment densities for proposed development types based on published, publicly available data. And it uses the IMPLAN regional economic input-output modeling tool to generate forecasts of economic benefit to the state based on construction spending and wages and spending and wages associated with on-site employment over the 10-year eligibility period. As staff have built experience with the IMPLAN tool in the Aspire program context, concern has grown that the generic economic benefit measurement methodology being used may lead to the underestimation of economic benefits generated by transformative commercial projects. This is because transformative commercial projects are by definition unique and without precedent, and their uniqueness comes from the result of the various eligibility tests these projects are subject to. So after satisfying project size and development cost thresholds that establish eligibility, commercial projects must also establish that they meet a test of special economic importance to the state by creating modern facilities that help the state attract targeted industries and by leveraging the state's mass transit assets, higher education assets, and other economic development assets. Because of their impact and strategic characteristics, the generic impact measurement methodology staff have been using, and it's appropriate for more modest scale and typical commercial Aspire projects, may not comprehensively reflect the benefits that transformative projects can be shown to generate. And the tax credit award levels that could result from the application of the generic approach to transformative projects could result in an insufficient amount of funding via tax credit awards for projects that otherwise would have a large positive economic impact to the state. So to address the concern we've identified, EDA staff are proposing a new net economic benefit test that is tailored to and recognizes the unique economic impacts associated with transformative commercial projects, and it's really just sort of a minor tweak of it because its foundation is going to stay the same. So specifically, we're asking for approval of a policy update that allows the following two project-related specifics and benefit categories when evaluating economic benefits for transformative commercial projects. First, we'd like to be able to reflect project-specific job densities. These would be provided by the applicant with supporting materials that would be reviewed and corroborated by EDA. We recommend this element because unique job densities can be expected to be a feature of the transformative commercial projects that can pass the test of special economic importance. And second, we'd like to be able to reflect other measurable project-related economic benefits beyond those tax revenues that are outputs of the IMPLAN model, to state agencies and bodies that are substantially supported through state appropriations, such as public universities, certain public transit agencies, and publicly owned health facilities. If the project benefits can be generated directly by such an entity's project activities, such as via patient fees or intellectual property licensing fees or something similar, or if payments made to such an entity for use of the entity's real property assets, such as a land lease or some other payment, can be quantified. And we recommend this element because for state budget-supported entities, these benefits would also benefit the state by reducing the need for state revenues by that particular state agency or body, and because they're not forecastable by the in-plan model. And so for implementing this policy, the modified approach we're proposing would have the following features. First, we'd continue to run project net positive economic benefit test using the in-plan model for all commercial Aspire projects. Second, if the applicant meets the prescribed commercial transformative project test, the applicant may submit their own quantitative analysis of additional net benefits as we're allowing it with the policy. EDA staff would validate the provided benefits estimates using our own in-house resources or those of outside retained experts. To the extent that we validate those estimates of benefit, we'd include the additional benefit in the tax credit award calculation, and as appropriate, we would also recommend conditions to such projects to ensure that the project-specific benefits forecast would remain in place throughout the eligibility period. And as part of the materials that we shared with you, we also provided an illustrative rubric that gives you an idea of how we would go through the process to make sure that this is only applied to the limited number of commercial transformative projects and how we would go ahead and ascertain that the benefits are certain and in place and quantifiable. So that's my presentation.
Do we have any questions for Nat? If we have no questions for Nat, can I get a motion to approve?
Can I get a motion to approve?
I'll second.
Thank you,
Chairman.
Thank you. Here we go. No, listen. I like the assertion. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Let's go to the next item. This is Aspire Program. New Jersey Innovation Associates Urban Renewal LLC, Kevin DeSmit, Senior Advisor, Tax Credit Policy, presenting. Kevin.
Good morning and thank you. The members are asked to approve the application of New Jersey Innovation Associates Urban Renewal LLC, also referred to as NJIA throughout, for a transformative project located in New Brunswick for the issuance of tax credits to the Aspire program as set forth in the New Jersey Economic Recovery Act of 2020. The recommended approval is to award up to 40% of project costs, not to exceed $271,186,902 in Aspire tax credits, based upon the financing gap illustrated by the project's capital stack. This project represents the first phase of the New Jersey Health Life Science Exchange, being branded as Helix, which is going to be developed in downtown New Brunswick, and this phase is known as H1. H1 entails the development of a 12-story, nearly 573,000 square foot building, and represents a $750 million capital investment. It consists of three major components: the New Jersey Innovation Hub, new research laboratories for Rutgers University, and a medical education facility for the Robert Wood Johnson Medical School. Additional phases of Helix are expected to include laboratory and office space, as well as a residential component. H1 is being developed on a 1.2-acre parcel and will ultimately be owned by NJIA, which is a special purpose entity of which New Brunswick Development Corporation, also known as DEVCO, is the sole member. Currently, the New Brunswick Parking Authority owns the property that will be the site of H1, and in December of 2021, executed a purchase-sale agreement with Downtown Hub Associates LLC, or Downtown Hub, of which DEVCO is the managing member. An initial payment of $6 million was made towards the overall purchase price of $22.8 million. NJIA is expected to receive an assignment from Downtown Hub and will then acquire property directly with the payment of the balance at financial closing. Approved by the board as a Strategic Innovation Center investment, the NJEDA is a member of Downtown Hub and made an investment of $10 million, with $6 million of those funds used to make the initial payment to the Parking Authority and $4 million to fund site preparation and related costs. The Downtown Hub operating agreement provides that the $10 million will be reimbursed to NJEDA by applying the amount against NJEDA's base rental payments as a tenant at the facility by the creation of a sinking fund used to pay NJEDA costs. Final terms of any lease will ultimately be subject to a separate review and approval by the NJEDA board at a later date. NJIA will facilitate and coordinate the financing of the project through the Middlesex County Improvement Authority. During construction and for at least 30 years after completion, the property and the project, including all improvements, will be owned in their entirety by NJIA. The lead development entity will be DEVCO, which was established in 1976 as a nonprofit development company to initiate redevelopment projects in the city of New Brunswick. DEVCO has overseen $3.5 billion of redevelopment activity and is led by President Christopher Palladino. DEVCO has been the lead developer for several other projects that have received assistance from the NJEDA. So as noted previously, the nearly 573,000 square foot project consists of three primary components, which I'll describe in greater detail. So the New Jersey Innovation Hub will total nearly 129,000 square feet. 59,000 of those square feet will include a life sciences incubator space, and the remaining 79,000 or so square feet of the hub will be dedicated to core partners, including Rutgers University, Hackensack Meridian Health, RWJ Barnabas Health, and Middlesex County. Translational research facility components of the project will total nearly 249,000 square feet and represent the largest single investment in life sciences translational research in New Jersey history. Rutgers intends to populate the translational research facility with 80 principal investigators and their teams, and has committed $270 million to recruit and retain new principal investigators over the next 7 years. The Robert Wood Johnson Medical School will entail nearly 180,000 square feet and will provide state-of-the-art facilities. The medical school's current facility is in an isolated suburban location in Piscataway. The new facility will provide immediate access to clinical research opportunities for students with the Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital, the Rutgers Cancer Institute of New Jersey, the Clinical Academic Building, and the Eric B. Chandler Health Center, all within a few blocks. So as noted in the previous memo and as alluded to here, this is being approved as a transformative project. So the Aspire statute provides for a category of redevelopment projects, transformative projects, that must meet certain significant criteria and can receive tax credits up to the lesser of $300 million or 40% of project costs. This includes project costs that are at a minimum of $100 million and project square footage that is at least 500,000 square feet. So the project satisfies both of those criteria. For a commercial project, it also meets the following special economic importance criteria, of which the project does both. So it needs to create 500 new full-time jobs. It far exceeds that, and it needs to provide opportunities to leverage leadership in a high priority targeted industry, in this case, life sciences. The project meets additional transformative project criteria by leveraging mass transit assets with its location immediately adjacent to the New Brunswick train station and its reliance on partnerships with numerous institutions of higher education in the state. Additionally, the expansion of the state's leading medical school in a location adjacent to greater clinical experiences is expected to improve the state's ability to retain physicians. New Jersey is projected to have the worst primary care physician shortage of any northeastern state by 2025, falling about 1,000 physicians short of the number required. So by nature of being a transformative project, with costs estimated to be $695,009,390, the project is eligible for an Aspire tax credit not to exceed $278,003,756, which is the lesser of $300 million and 40% of these costs. The applicant has requested a tax credit award of $271,186,902. NJ staff has reviewed the application to determine if there is a shortfall in the project development economics pertaining to the return on the investment for the developer and their ability to, track the required investment for this project. Staff analyzed the pro forma and projections of the project and compared the returns with and without the Aspire award over 13 years. So the internal rate of return without the Aspire tax credit is 2.29%. The internal rate of return with the Aspire tax credit is 9.28%. This is less than the hurdle rate of 15%, which was provided by EDA's contracted consultant, Jones Lang LaSalle, after an evaluation of the project's economics. The Aspire rule set required net positive economic benefit to the state at 185% of the award of tax credits for projects, and the project meets this requirement. So effectively, the net present value of all the projected benefits for the project is roughly $340 million over 10 years. Of 10 years of the tax credit award, and the net present value of those tax credits is roughly $182 million. So this is, I think, 187%. The benefit is 187% of the award. As established by the Aspire rule, the application was required to achieve a minimum score in the areas of equitable development, housing opportunities, smart growth, environmental justice, and climate resilience. At the time of this recommendation, there are $2.5 billion in unallocated tax credit resources available to Aspire transformative projects. So authority staff has reviewed the application for New Jersey Innovation Associates Urban Renewal LLC and finds that it satisfies the eligibility requirements of the Aspire statute and rules. It is recommended that the members approve and authorize the authority to issue a redevelopment agreement to the applicant. The tax credit award would be credited against the total available Aspire transformative projects award authority. Staff recommends the following conditions of approval. Much of this relates to the distinction of special economic importance. So the applicant is required to submit executed lease agreements and project support agreements from all core partners, and contents must be satisfactory to the authority within 6 months of authority board approval. This includes satisfactory evidence that Rutgers has made $261 million in project equity available to NJ Innovation Associates Urban Renewal LLC. The applicant must demonstrate to the NJEDA on an ongoing basis during the eligibility period that the project includes the uses relating to the special economic importance required for a transformative project and evidence of Rutgers' expenditure of $270 million and continued commitment to recruiting and retaining principal investors. So with that, I will pause and open it to questions.
Just add an echo for Kevin's excellent presentation. Yeah, I think we have a quick question for you. We talk about this one's been 5 years in the making since we started talking about the hub project that Governor Murphy announced back in March, I believe, 2018. The centerpieces of the governor's strategy around reclaiming our leadership position in innovation and entrepreneurship. You know, things like the Evergreen Fund is one of the big sort of tentpole there. The innovation hub, now called the Helix. I still call it the Triborough Bridge. I'm still going to call it the hub if someone corrected repeatedly. But this project is, again, one of the centerpiece sort of tent poles of the strategy around connecting higher ed, and particularly Rutgers, to the real economy, to making major investments in research and commercializable research that we think will lead to game-changing innovations. I don't know what those will be, but that's the nature of innovation and exploration is to be a bit open source and open-ended, and having a real commitment from New Jersey's anchor institutions to partner with and participate here. So Rutgers is sort of the anchor of anchors here. EDA is one of the tenants and anchors as well, as is Robert Wood Johnson Barnes Health System, Hackensack Meridian Health System, obviously the two sort of big, two of the biggest health providers in the state, health systems in the state, as well as Princeton, who's a key part of this as well. So when we think about transformative projects, this is also the first transformative approval in the Aspire program, so a big day for the Aspire program. When we think about the nature of transformative types of investments, it's hard to think of one that checks as many of those boxes and meets as many of those standards as this one. And so, the impact here, we think this is going to be a game changer. We'll be talking about, you know, Beth and our grandkids and our news, telling them about being there at the birth, or the Helix, the hub. I'm still going to call it. I'm going to tell them it's the hub. I'm called the Helix now because this is a signature major investment in life sciences, in innovation, in New Brunswick, in Middlesex County. And so this is an incredibly important project on a whole variety of fronts. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions or Kevin, you have an update or be good.
I just want to clarify a statement that was made for the board. So relative to this project, folks might recall we made a $10 million investment in this project for our strategic innovation centers. We will be coming to the board next month relative to how we're going to manage that $10 million relative to this project. We have not definitively asked the board for any guidance or vote on that yet. So there was a reference to a comment on how that will be handled going forward. We just want to let the board know that that has not been resolved yet or not documented. What we did say relative to our $10 million investment is that we would come back to the board and that we hope to use that to offset rent that the EDA will have at the facility. So just a clarifying point for everybody.
Other questions? If we have no other questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Robert Chisholm.
Thank you, Robert. Can I get a second?
Roger.
Thank you, Phil. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move on to the next item on the agenda. Just Greens LLC doing business as Aero Farms. This is a Grow New Jersey Assistance Program modification. Susan Greitz, Director, Incentive Relationship Management, presenting. Susan.
Hello. Good morning. Okay. Just Greens is a grower of leafy greens using aeroponics located in Newark, going by the doing business as Aero Farms. They approved in 2014 for a $6.5 million grow to create 69 jobs at a 53,000 square foot headquarters and production facility in Newark. At the time of approval, it was comprised of two buildings. One was to be a rehab, the other to be a new rebuild. Over the course of time, they had some challenges with that second building. The rehab went along fine, that housed most of the leafy greens. But the other building, they had some issues and delays with their developer at the time. So during 2018, they came to the board for a series of modifications. They're all articulated in the memo. But most notably, there was a removal of that second building. That was the delay. And in place of that space, they grabbed a 2,500 square foot office space just around the block that enabled them to come and certify completion of their project on time. So they did certify in 2018 at the end. Since that time, they've been able to finish that second building that they had intended all along. They did so compliant with green building standards, prevailing wage affirmative action, and spending almost $7 million on additional capital investment. So at this point, they'd like to increase their qualified business facility, or QBF, from 46,000 to 71,000 square feet. That extra space, that office space, we call it Park Place in your memo, was integral to being able to certify completion of the project. We'd like to recommend that this approval be conditioned upon their maintaining operations at that space without subleasing it or terminating that lease. So with that, I'll ask you for your vote. Any questions I can answer for you?
Questions for Susan? If you have no questions for Susan, go ahead, please.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around what they're trying to accomplish here. Has it been done in the past where companies come back for, let's say, a second bite of the apple? I mean, I understand they had some issues with the second building in 2018, but was there any language in there that they would come back four approvals back in 2018 at a further date?
So during that time, they certainly told us they'd like to do that second building. They plan to. There was no advance approval from board at that time because we hadn't seen the whole thing play out. This addition is not going to increase their board in any way. This is really just going to allow them to move their folks freely about the larger cabin, if you will. So it's not going to increase their grow in any way, and it just makes their operation more streamlined and smooth.
And they've met all their requirements.
Absolutely. Yes, and they continue being
great. All jobs, did all CapEx, been really good, did all the check.
Okay. Absolutely.
Editorial comment. One of the challenges with grow is it's incredibly prescriptive and, like, so inhibiting of an actual ability to sort of grow and expand and do things. It's really tight. Emerge is better, not perfect, but because there's appropriate compliance restrictions there. But companies that actually do better than they plan to do have bumped up against being like, well, actually, we have more space, we have more employees, we need to be able to move around a little bit, which is a good thing. It's a high-class problem, but
sure.
Grow does not necessarily fully celebrate that high-class problem.
Other questions for Susan? If we have no other questions for Susan, can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you. Elizabeth, can I get a second? Thank you. Thank you for the second. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals? Abstentions?
Aisha Glover, I'm going to abstain because Audible has an investment interest in Aerohorn.
Great. Thank you, Aisha. We're going to stick with Susan here on another Grow New Jersey Assistance Program, mm-hmm. COVID-related termination. This is for LI 2000, Inc., doing business at Century 21 Department Stores. Susan.
Yes, sir. So this is a request for a termination under the COVID-related relief provisions that were enacted as part of the ERA law and actually expanded just a couple of months ago. LI 2000, doing business as Century 21 Department Stores, is a retailer, clothing and other household goods. They were approved for a grow in 2014.
One second. You guys still on the phone? We're hearing some beeps.
Yep, we're here.
Yes. Yeah, we're here.
Hearing the beeps too? We're sorry about that. Whoever's beeping, please stop beeping.
Okay. They were approved for a grow back in 2014 for just under $40 million for the creation of 261 new jobs and the retention of 931 jobs at a 1.2 million square foot distribution facility in Secaucus. The project certified completion in 2017, resulting in an updated award of $35.6 million. Like most retailers, they had challenges in 20, as soon as folks started leaving the mall, and business declined, resulting in them filing for bankruptcy protections at the end of 2020. At this point, they are still working through that process, but would like to exit the grow. They have since had to leave their facility and are just kind of working through those protections, as I said, and this will enable them to cease those reporting commitments that continue. It fits all the criteria of our COVID relief review, so staff certainly supports the request.
Any questions for Susan? If we have no questions for Susan, can I get a motion to approve?
Move the Roger. Second
Roger. Phil, can I? Second, okay. Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? The next item on the agenda was a Grow New Jersey appeal that is being withheld from consideration today. Moving on, under bonds, adoption of written post-issuance compliance procedures with respect to the authority's biomedical research facilities bonds. Lori Zagarella, Program Manager, Bond Compliance, presenting. Lori.
Good morning.
This request is to approve the written post-issuance compliance procedures with respect to the authority's 2016 Series A biomedical research facilities bonds. This is an administrative request, the purpose of which is to spell out the compliance responsibilities the EDA and Roan University Rutgers Camden Board of Governors, the joint board, have as they relate to the state-backed bond issues. The request also asks to approve the use of professionals and staff to take all necessary actions related to this request. This request is made in coordination with and direction from the New Jersey State Treasurer and the Attorney General's Office and has been reviewed by Bond Counsel Jerry Ostow. As required by the IRS and in accordance with the tax certificate, the EDA has been conducting arbitrage compliance with regard to the bonds, and the Roan University Rutgers Camden Board of Governors have been overseeing the private activity limitations with regard to the facility financed with the proceeds of the bonds. The authority now desires to memorialize those ongoing tax compliance procedures in writing pursuant to and as described in the written procedures. The authority, in consultation with bond counsel, will supplement and update these procedures as appropriate to find a continuing, to provide a continuing source of guidance on these requirements. Happy to answer any questions you may have.
Questions for Lori? We have no questions for Lori. Can I get a motion to approve?
Robert Chipton.
Thank you, Robert. Can I get a second?
Caridi will second.
Thank you, Marlene. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals? Abstentions? All right, moving on to authority matters. Our 2021 Comprehensive Annual Report, one of the world's longest annual reports. Virginia Pellerin, Director of Communications and Marketing, presenting. Virginia.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you the 2021 NJEDA Annual Report. Before you, you will find the narrative portion of the report, which highlights the NJEDA's many achievements and milestones reached throughout 2021 under the thoughtful expert guidance of this board. Beginning in 2006, to meet the requirements of Executive Order No. 37, the narrative annual report is combined with the authority's audited financial statements and serves as the NJEDA's comprehensive annual report. The full 2021 annual report, including audited financials and project lists, is exceptionally long, due largely to the tens of thousands of approvals for grants, loans, and technical assistance in support of the recovery of the state's business community from the COVID-19 pandemic. The report can be viewed in its entirety via a link provided in Convene or the link provided in an email sent prior to this meeting. The audited financial statements for the year ending December 31, 2021 were prepared pursuant to generally accepted accounting principles for a government entity. I am pleased to inform the board that the independent accounting firm of PKF O'Connor Davies has issued an unmodified opinion regarding the 2021 financial statements. On December 8, 2022, per its charter, the audit committee reviewed the 2021 audited financial statements and considered the relevancy, accuracy, and completeness of the information presented. The independent auditor met with the audit committee, where it was reported that the financial audit resulted in no negative findings or internal control deficiencies. Under Executive Order No. 37, the authority is required to obtain approval of its comprehensive annual report from its board of directors. Upon approval, this report will be submitted to the authority's unit, posted to the NJEDA's website, and transmitted electronically to members of the legislature. Authority staff has prepared the comprehensive annual report for 2021 as required and recommends members' approval. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Just one other
question. For Virginia. Go ahead, Doug.
Turning back the clock a bit to the 2019 Office of the State Comptroller audit, there were a number of recommendations related to transparency and reporting and annual reports, and we have done our damnedest to incorporate and reflect as much as we could those responses in this report. And so that's one of the, it is another reason why it is a bit longer and more detailed
then if you are a close reader of the annual every year, you will notice it is more detailed in a variety of ways. Comptroller Walsh and his team for being consistently good partners in transparency here. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? If not, can we get a motion to approve?
Second motion.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second? Thank you, Jenny.
A second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Thank you, Virginia. Next item is amended administrative rules, authority fee rules. Allison Jones, Director of Legislative and Regulatory Affairs, presenting. Allison.
Morning, everybody. The goal of these amendments is to address issues that many have identified, like the lack of flexibility in the current rules when it comes to setting fees, waiving fees, and refunding fees. These amendments were reviewed and approved by the Attorney General's office. They were posted on our webpage for public comment and then was received, and they were also approved by the Governor's Rules Office. Just as a quick refresher, EDA's authorizing statute empowers EDA to, quote, require and collect such fees and charges as the authority shall determine to be reasonable, end quote. It's important to note that this proposal doesn't change the current dollar amounts or set new dollar amounts. Rather, it's establishing a framework for the authority to set future fees and fee-setting processes. A few highlights from these amendments. First, we're creating a new general fee applicability section. Part A of this section provides that all applicants will be subject to fees that are either included in a specific rulemaking, for example, Aspire, which we talked about today, or including in the fee rules themselves, like bonds. Part B provides that the board may set separate fees if there's an emergency assistance program, for example, the Small and Micro Business PPE Access Program, or it's a pilot program, for example, NJZIP, or there are other sources of funding for the authority's administrative costs. Another highlight is that the existing application section is going to be amended to provide that an application fee may be refunded, either in whole or in part, where an application is not processed or approved because the application is complete or the funding for the program has been exhausted. And finally, the existing fee waiver section is amended to provide that the board may adopt objective criteria for waiving fees and delegate the authority to approve fee waivers based on that criteria to the CEO. In addition, the language regarding fee waivers for governmental agencies and projects is clarified such that all fees rather than just certain fees may be waived. Happy to take any questions if you have them.
Excellent summary and presentation, Allison. The fee rules that exist on the books today kind of are a vestige of a different era when we did fewer things. We still do all the things we did under those rules, but we do a lot more things and have more variety and flexibility and is really helpful as we move forward here. So deep appreciation to Chris and Allison, Jagasa, and a lot of others, Gabriel, who worked hard on getting these rules spiffed up.
Other comments or questions for Allison? If not, can I get a motion to approve?
So move, Giblin.
I'll second Jenny Brown.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Let's go to a memorandum of understanding with NJIT. Gene Palermo, Project Officer, Strategic Sector Development, presenting. Gene.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Quinn and members of the board. Before you is a memorandum with one request. The members are asked to approve a memorandum of understanding between the New Jersey Economic Development Authority and the New Jersey Institute of Technology in the amount of $200,000 in the purpose of funding the compensation of an
Administrative Director for the New Jersey Big Data Alliance and other expenses. By way of background, the state legislator designated the New Jersey Big Data Alliance as the state's advanced cyber infrastructure consortium in 2014. This past June, Governor Murphy signed into law the New Jersey fiscal year 2023 budget, which appropriated $200,000 to the New Jersey Big Data Alliance to be administered through the NJEDA. The New Jersey Big Data Alliance shall use the funds for the purpose of funding the compensation of a part-time administrative director and other expenses as specified in the MOU. The compensation for the New Jersey Big Data Alliance's administrative director will be paid via monthly salary schedule totaling an annual salary of $50,000. NJIT will act as the New Jersey Big Data Alliance's fiscal representative. The administrative director of the New Jersey Big Data Alliance will be hosted at NJIT for the purpose of administration, payroll, human resources, IT, and facilities, and will occupy an office at the NJIT's Jersey City campus in the Institute of Data Sciences. The funding for the compensation will be through the funds and given to NJIT on behalf of the New Jersey Big Data Alliance in the following three installments scheduled. Year one will be upon the hire of the administrative director, which we're anticipating early next month. Year two, first anniversary of the hire of the administrative director. And year three, the second anniversary of the hire of the administrative director. This memo outlines the terms of the MOU and proposed tasks of the New Jersey Big Data Alliance's administrative director. As part of the proposed, the administrative director of the New Jersey Big Data Alliance's tasks would include, but not be limited to, encouraging the creation of joint education programs, including the establishment of a common curriculum for data sciences and the creation of coordinated certificates, workforce training, and outreach programs. They will also be promoting inter-university research collaborations, organizing events that promote big data education and collaborating across state government, academia, and industry. And finally, developing a shared cloud that integrates data infrastructure, hosted data, and data analytics. Subject to the terms and conditions of the agreement, the New Jersey Big Data Alliance will provide NJEDA with quarterly progress reports for the life of this agreement on all core activities of the New Jersey Big Data Alliance and its administrative director. Financial reporting of expenditures will be provided on a semi-annual basis. This documentation and reporting will ensure that the New Jersey Big Data Alliance is within compliance of the agreement. Thank you for your time, consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Do we have any questions for Jane? We have no questions for Jane. Can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer. Sorry.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second?
Second, Horace.
Thank you, Bill. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's go to the next item. Updates to delegation of authority, real estate development, NJ Accelerate, and the NJ Energy Resilience Bank. Chris Baker, Chief Legal and Administrative Officer, presenting. Chris.
Thank you, Jim. Good morning, board members. Happy to present the fifth and wait for it, final installment in our multi-part series of delegations of authority. And as you recall, this all started when our board governance consultant made a number of recommendations on how to improve overall board efficiency and functionality. Among other things, the consultant recommended that the board delegate more routine and administrative matters, decisions to staff to enable the board to focus on higher level decision making. That prompted us to undertake a thorough, comprehensive review and frankly overhaul of our existing delegations of authority. Last spring, taking you back a little bit here, the board approved a delegation of authority policy, which provided that most delegations are going to be to the CEO, who then has the ability to sub-delegate to staff at appropriate levels. And again, that's unless the board says otherwise. Then over the course of three meetings between the spring and summer of last year, the board approved delegated authority for a variety of programs and processes, including the authority to approve or decline applications when the board has set objective criteria for eligibility, increases in thresholds for approving procured contracts, and new delegations for memoranda of understanding agreements with other governmental entities. After a little bit of a break, we're back with the final set of updates to historic delegations of authority. And today, specifically, we're asking the board to approve updates to delegations of authority pertaining to real estate development, the New Jersey Accelerate Program, and the Energy Resilience Bank. Consistent with the delegation policy that the board approved last March, all delegations are to the CEO, who has the ability to sub-delegate. And as with the prior approvals, these involve matters that are more routine and non-discretionary, including approvals under dollar thresholds that are set by the board and decisions where the board has approved specific objective criteria that can be administered and implemented by staff. So the board memo describes 16 separate revisions to and a couple new delegations of authority. 13 of those involve real estate development. As always, these proposed delegations were reviewed and discussed at policy or during the committee meetings. I'm happy to answer any questions, and I also have our experts on call here, so if you have any questions about specific delegations, I'm going to phone a friend here.
All right. Do we have any questions for Chris?
Chairman, I just want to comment. I think this is so smart to streamline our process and to allow the staff to have the delegation and to let the board really focus on the high end problems and issues. So I just applaud this move.
Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you, Jenny. Any other comments or questions? All right. If none, can I get a motion to approve?
I'll move to Jenny back.
Thank you, Jenny. Can I get a second? Thank you, Noreen. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's go to our last voting item on the agenda, Special Counsel, Executive Order 52, Attorney General Investigation, Holtec, and Other Legal Actions. Fred Cole, Senior Vice President, Business Support presenting. Fred.
Good morning, Chairman. Good morning, Board. Bringing this item back to you, which you've seen before over time, the Board's being asked to approve additional contract funding of $500,000 for a revised fee cap of $4,820,000 with Friedman, Kaplan, Seiler, and Edelman, LLP. And this is due to the ongoing need for representation related to the subject matters. The board is also being asked to approve an extension of the term of the contract for 1 year from February 20, 2023 to February 19, 2024. Over time, since the origination of this agreement in February of 2019, all of the contract extension options have been executed, and the initial retention of $250,000 was increased several times as outlined in the board memo today. Through January 31st of this year, 2023, the authority has paid approximately $4,202,264 under the retention agreement. And that's about it. Just to recap, we're looking for a one-year extension till February 19, 2024, for $500,000, only if needed. And it would be under the same terms and conditions as outlined in the original retention letter. Any questions?
Just one grace note on what Fred added. You may be asking, this is still going on? Yeah, there's at least one piece of active litigation. It's not a good idea to talk about active litigation, but there's a piece of it that's out there that is in appeal that is still ongoing, and here we are.
Any questions for Fred?
I do have a question about the amount of spending that we are spending on the attorney fees. Is it worth, is the juice worth the squeeze? What we're going after, are we spending good money for bad?
So at risk of talking about the pending litigation, which Noreen will stab me in the middle of, and Chris will leave across the table at me. Short answer to your question, I think it is. I think the precedent in that case is quite problematic for our ability to oversee these tax credit programs.
Okay.
And having it given a fresh look in the appeal process, I think it's worth it.
Other questions? If we have no other questions, can I get a motion to approve?
Greg, a motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Just 1 second.
Thank you, Noreen. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, that wraps up our voting. Tim, I believe you have some board memoranda to review.
I do. I'll be brief. You have, consistent with what Chris identified earlier, as we have more delegated authority, you will see more volume in this part of the board book monthly, which is our delegated authority memoranda reports. You have six of them in your books this month. Happy to answer any questions if you have them. I'll just highlight and just a reminder that a ton happens at these meetings, and we deeply appreciate your time and oversight and partnership. A ton happens in between the meetings as well. You see, for example, the underground storage tank program, 58 approvals, 16 approvals under another DEP-related program around hazardous discharge site remediation. So a lot happens in between the meetings, and that's all memorialized and laid out for you in those reports. Happy to answer any questions.
All right. Thank you, Tim. I will acknowledge any members of the public who have registered to speak in person. Is anybody there in the room with you that would like to speak?
Does not appear so unless a member of our staff is
okay.
Certainly a member. They're welcome to. It's a free country for the time being.
All righty. Well, let's let me turn things over to the operator, and we'll see if there's anybody on the line.
Chairman, do you want me to read the public comment now? This is Danielle.
Oh, I'm sorry. I must have skipped the page. We'll have Danielle Esser review the policy for speaking at this meeting. Thank you, Danielle.
Thank you. The NJEDA public comment policy is also available on the NJEDA website. We'll just share it with you now for any members of the public who are on the phone or if anybody was in person who would like to provide public comment. Each speaker is prompted to speak one at a time. They should announce his or her name, organization, affiliation, and topic on which the remarks will be given. We'll have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit to comments pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time is expired, and a speaker may not speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure enough time is available for all of those who wish to speak, and speakers may also provide related documents, printed comments, or materials attached to an email. Thank you.
All right. I must have skipped over a page. There's nobody in public that would like to speak in person?
Yeah, I'll go there.
All right. Then I, why don't I go to the operator, see if there's anybody on the line here.
Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1, then 0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, you may press 1, then 0 at this time. One moment, please, for our first question. Mr. Chairman, there are no questions from the phone lines.
Great. Thank you, operator. If there's no additional comments or questions, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation today. I'll now make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Can I get a second?
Dragon, second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you, everybody. Good meeting.
Thank you, everybody.